Okay, everybody, Stephen Key here, and I have a very, very special guest that I've known for a long time, April Mitchell. Thank you for coming on InventRight TV. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing fantastic.
Well, we've known each other for a long time. We'll get to that in just a minute. But first of all, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, first and foremost, I'm a wife and mother, and I'm an inventor, right? That's why we're here. By trade, I was a teacher, and then I had the pleasure of coaching some InventRight students for a few years, which was fantastic. But then I switched to full-time inventing, which has been fantastic. And I've invented in several industries. I've licensed products in housewares, novelty, the party space. But my primary space is the toy and game industry, because I've been in there for a while. I'm having some, you know, some wins there. And, you know, it's just, I really enjoy the space. Part of it is because I do a lot with my family in the space. You know, I work with other inventors as well, but my kids are really involved in it, and it's a lot of fun for all of us. So,
well, let's dive in the toy industry a little bit, because that seems to be your favorite. Is it, well, first of all, how do I start with this? How did you start in the toy industry, first of all? How did you get a start?
Yeah. So first, I just want to say first, I started in the housewares industry, right? I licensed my first products there. So I thought, well, gosh, we're already coming up with stuff at home. I had, as a teacher, I had made learning games. As a mom, I had made learning games. And then the kids started coming up with things on their own. And I'm like, we could turn that into a tabletop game, or we could turn that into something, right? So I thought, if I could do this in the housewares industry, why can't I do it in the toy and game industry, right? So that's kind of where I started. But then I soon realized, oh, in the toy and game industry, you often need to change more than just one thing. Like in the housewares industry, I made a hook adjustable instead of just a regular hook, right? So it took me some time learning the industry and really what people wanted and how different it had to be than things that were already out there. So that's kind of how I started. And when I had my first couple game ideas and first couple ideas, I went to the Chicago Toy and Game Fair. And that really, I learned so much. I got to get in front of people for the first time and really learn, okay, I need to do more. My games, they need to evolve. You know, I wasn't there yet when I first started.
Got it. And that's what I want to talk a little bit about, because I think this industry is a tough industry.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it's tough for a couple of reasons. I think the industry has been open to work with us inventors for a long time. Right. Mm-hmm. And the competition is pretty stiff. There's some really good toy design firms out there. We'll get to that in a minute. And you have to take it a little bit further, because it's not so much a problem solution. Mm-hmm. You're creating fun.
Right.
So let's talk about taking it further, not just a small change, because some industries, you can make a small change and they're going to love it. Why do they need more than just a small change?
Well, I think, now this is my own personal opinion, but I don't think other companies want to look like they're a copycat, right? They don't want to look like that is the exact same game, but with one difference, right? Nobody wants to be the copycat company. And so I think there's oftentimes where we can say this game can compete when we're pitching, this game can compete with X, Y, or Z out there, but it has such a twist and there's a familiarity to it, but there's also such a difference or several combinations of differences that make it stick out. And people say, oh, we want that wow factor. We want that different thing, but we also don't want it, which this can be tricky sometimes, too different, where people are like, oh, we don't know if we can play that way, or we don't know if we can do that or take that chance, right? So it's trying to find that middle ground of different enough, wow enough, but also not too much where they're afraid to be the first one to kind of go there.
Got it. That's a fine line.
It is. It's a tricky fine line. And every company is so different, right? We learn that every company is so unique in their own ways and looking for their own like niches, or they might share the same category as other people, but they do that category different. So let's say, for example, I have a family party game, right? So a party game, but you can also play with your family. It's not just an adult party game. So you can play with your whole family. And so many companies are selling family party games, but they might look at them differently, right? So there's just a lot of tricky things there.
Let's talk about you've done it. Now, how many years have you been in the industry now?
I think six or seven.
All right. So you've got a lot of time invested. You've gone out to New York Toy Fair. I know you've done that. How many times have you done that now?
Twice. So once right before COVID and then the first one after COVID. Yeah.
So you're doing trade shows, you're pitching to companies. Could you tell us a little bit about when you first started out, what your prototypes or your pitch look like versus how your pitch looks 7 years later?
Sure. So I did always believe there was an importance in sizzle videos for the industry. And I still do. That's the number one thing I will always say. I can't imagine pitching something without a sizzle video to the majority of companies. There are a few companies that you can pitch to other than that. But I've always had a sizzle video, and I feel like I always will. I still do. I have changed a little bit in some. When I started, I had a sell sheet for the game or the toy. I don't always do that now. Sometimes I will have a pitch deck where it might break things down, or I might show the trend that this game is meeting, and I might show, you know, the perfect backstory or why this is a great fit for the company. And then I might break down just the three or four basic steps of the game. So that way then the company can go back and pitch it. And I think that's important for a light strategy game or strategy game. If it's a very simple game, and I don't always do a pitch deck, but I will always have a video. Okay. I will always have a video.
And that prototype in that video probably looks pretty darn good, I would say.
No, it depends. It depends on what it is. It depends on the game or the toy. Often there, if it's a card-based game, there might be another element or component to it, maybe tokens. But I can show you a couple prototypes today that you're like, what? But the thing is the prototypes have to convey the message. They have to show that it works. They have to be able to see people using that prototype, right? And really understand that, yes, this works. Yes, this is fun or enjoyable. And yes, we can replicate this and tweak it and make it a little bit better. But some prototypes are really nice. And you're like, oh, wow, did a designer do that? And then others, you're like, oh, no, I have one right next to me that was put together for $10 at like a Home Depot that my son helped me with. And it was great.
Do you have a picture? Can you?
Yeah. So I'll show you that right now. So this is a big hoop. Here you go. And what we did is I needed to find something bendable that could click onto this longer tube. And then I wanted to be able to show that it could bend like this. So I told my son what I needed it to do and that I needed it to be able to go into the ground and be adjustable. So we have different sections of this long pole, and you can make it shorter, smaller. And the company licensed it, and it's called Bam's Ball.
Oh, nice.
And it's very, very simple though, right? And we were able to make it with just things from our local hardware store. And you know, it got the point across. It's very similar to what's being made today. They've made some tweaks and they made it better, of course. But it doesn't always have to be something expensive where you hire somebody out.
That looks pretty good.
Thank you.
Colors look good. I mean, it looks pretty good. Maybe up close, it might not be perfect, but it looks pretty good. Can you tell me that? So it has to function.
It has to function. And I think, you know, as someone who's designed in other industries, it's very easy to do. Often in other industries, I might do a virtual prototype, and sometimes I'll do a physical prototype. But in the toy and game industry, I would say the most of the time, a company is going to want to play test that game. They're going to want to try out that toy. And if you don't have a sample to send them or sample for them to print and play, now I try to make sure my cards are great. And if they're in another country and they offer to print it themselves, I'll definitely say, yes, please do click on this link and here's the directions to print it. Otherwise, I'll send it, you know, in the mail. But I've only probably licensed a couple things without in the toy and game industry without them play testing it first.
Okay. So they need that prototype that you made needs to hold up with play testing. Okay, I got it.
Right. Now this one, for example, was so simple. And I could share the link. So maybe we can play the video for people that's posted now on the website. But it was so simple. They got it right away and they were able to make their own prototype and they didn't need me to send this big long thing, which was great. And a lot of times companies are like, oh no, we can replicate that or send us the file and we'll 3D print it if it's something smaller, which is fantastic. But we have to be ready to send a prototype. We really do.
Hey there, I'm Outside Ed. I want to introduce you to BAMS Ball. Let's go play.
Makes perfect sense. So it's different than some industries. Okay, so they really want to play test it. It has to show how it works and fun. It has to do all those things. So it's not too many smoke and mirrors. It's got to be kind of pretty much real.
Correct. And especially with this game, Formworm, this is an example, and I'll show you the first prototype of it. But I felt like my life was in the hands of kindergartners, because once the company play tested it, then they took it to local schools. Like they own their own factory. And so they made some samples and they tested in schools before they signed the contract. So, you know, it's important to be ready for that.
Would you say that from the housewares kitchen industry to the toys, you've had to up your game a little bit? The demands are higher. Is that correct to say that?
I would say I pitch a lot. I don't ever feel like, and I think this goes with any industry, I would say though, that I don't feel like I've ever completed my list of potential licensees. I always feel like there's somebody else to meet, more people I can, you know, reach out to.
No, but what I mean is the level of execution is higher than some industries.
Sure. I think when you know that you have to have a prototype and you have to show it working and you have to know that people will play test a game for weeks and then it'll go through a board and then they'll play test it again, depending on the company.
Okay.
It can go through a lot of months of play testing. Nobody wants that game that's broken. And I don't mean like a piece is broken, but people who play games have always, I'm sure you've played a game where like that doesn't work out every time. Nobody wants to be that company with that broken game where it's the same thing all the time or just doesn't work out, because that's no fun.
Is there a difference working with, let's say, the big boys? All right. I tell everybody, if you're working with Mattel or Hasbro or Spin Master, you're kind of in the Super Bowl. Those are kind of like top of the top. Is there a difference between working with those guys with guys that are a little bit smaller Is there a difference between both of them?
So I will say I have not had the pleasure opportunity to sign a deal yet with the biggest of them. But I will say I've worked with smaller, medium companies. And what's fantastic about working with the smaller companies is sometimes I'm pitching to the owner. I'm pitching to the person who gets to make the decision. And oftentimes they will, you know, consult with their top product development person or their marketing person, and they still will play test. But sometimes the first line of defense is the owner. If it's not in the smaller companies, it's often that second line. It's everybody reviews it. The owner's in on that review team. I think the larger companies tend to have more layers that you have to get through before you actually get someone A, playtesting it, and B, signing a deal. Where I really enjoy when I get to pitch to the owner, or I know that they are going to be reviewing it with the team that I just pitched it to and help make that decision.
So is it fair to say that when you're starting in this industry, let's summarize this a little bit. If you're going to start in the toy industry, you should love it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. You should definitely love it.
All right. Okay. Because it's one of the tougher ones. I tell everybody, you better love it because this is a tough industry because the competition's tough. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Right.
That when I hear someone say, hey, I'm throwing a football in the front yard with my son, and I want to submit this to Hasbro, I'm almost want to say, you know, you're talking about, I want to throw the football next Sunday in the Super Bowl. You have to kind of work your way up. Is that somewhat accurate that,
you know, I used to think so, but I would say, why not go out? Like when they have portals, when these big companies have portals, there's no reason not to submit it, but understand that it might be easier or faster for you to get into a smaller company. But I think you should cast that wide net. And if it fits with that company, they actually have a product line that it would fit into, then what do you got to lose? That's how I feel.
Yeah, what I'm finding out is that you have a lot to lose. And that's why I want to talk to you about this, because I've talked to some of the bigger companies and they're complaining that the quality's not there. They're complaining that people aren't ready for it. They need a little bit of time to get there.
Right.
They have a certain quality that they're looking for, and they're really working with the top design firm. So they kind of know they're working with the best of the best. So that's, I know that, hey, I feel the same way you do. You never know. I want to see if I can get it in there, but they told me they even know people's names on people that aren't quite ready for prime time. They actually kind of, they kind of know what's going on here, and they know that we all have that dream. So I did talk to a really big company. I told you the other day, and they had some glowing things to say about you.
Thank you.
Yeah. They said, you're ready for prime time is what they said.
They're fantastic.
Yeah. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because they're saying that a lot of people are getting, are not ready.
Sure.
But you got ready.
I got ready, but I remember not being ready and not realizing I wasn't ready, but I think the thing is you have to be open to that feedback. You've got to keep coming back to it. And a lot of times, you know, when you come up with your first idea, you don't realize that there's so many more in there, or that you can work on that. And that's something you can work on. I do think, you know, like you said, it's flooded. The industry even says it's flooded, you know, the game industry is flooded, and there's only so much shelf space. And so you are fighting, you know, against so many creatives to get that, you know, one of the 5 or 10 licensing agreements they get out every year. And so you've got to really love it, what you do. You've got to really enjoy it. And you've got to be able to commit and put in the time, because when I made, you know, when I started full time, it really made the difference for me being able to put that time in. And not, you know, I was already pitching and I already had a good base of companies that I had at my access. But at the same time, you've got to be coming up with more and more ideas. And then when you get that feedback, or you get that wish list, or you really understand the company better, is to keep okay, next time you get closer, the next time you get closer, and you feel like, okay, there's going to be a win here soon, you know. So
yeah, they had mentioned Shoot the Moon, and I know Shoot the Moon because that's my old boss, and I know Dave Small and Paul Rego very well over there, and I know kind of how they operate. And when he said they wanted more people like Shoot the Moon, I want to like say that's like the top of the top. I mean, they're prototypes, they're model makers, they shoot commercials, they have a bill of material, they know how it's going to be manufactured. I mean, they take it to a whole nother level.
Sure.
It's really a lot to ask someone starting out to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a team that helps you at all? Do you do everything by yourself?
So I'm by myself, but depending on who I partner with, like sometimes I have a partner who does 3D printing and they do the design work, or sometimes I work with a partner who has a design degree and the artwork and the design is way better than I could have done it. You know, when I'm doing things on my own, I'm using Canva and I'm making my cards and my pieces on Canva myself, if it's just me. But if I work with somebody else, then, you know, I can have, depending on what the product is, you know, something that's maybe up a level. And then sometimes I might pay for something done, but it's not often that I will pay for something to be done.
Is it quantity or quality when you submit?
Well, that's a good question. So I used to feel like, well, you know, it's, you've got to have the numbers. But what I've realized in the last couple years of, you know, showing up, I always wanted to have a product for somebody. I wanted to have a couple items to show everyone that was at the show, right? And I realized it's just not feasible. I'm better off when I'm looking back, I'm like, I could have just not made that one and that one, you know, but I wanted that extra one in. I wanted to have more to pitch. And so the quality is so important. The quality is, and at the same time, if I went with one quality idea, the chances are smaller though too. I feel like you need a certain handful of quality ideas instead of a dozen. So I'd rather show up with 4 or 5 quality now than 10 mediocre ideas.
Okay. Is this season, is there a certain time to pitch? Is there a season to this?
Well, I would say typically yes, but every company is different and you might just hit them right at the right spot. So for example, last year I signed a few contracts and they're actually going to be out this year. So that's really fast in the game industry, right? To sign something in September, October, November, and then actually have it be out the next year, but it fit that right timing and the space. And they, you know, those companies went for it. So I'll have 3 new products out between Q3 and Q4. This year, 2024, that were signed last fall, 2023. So that's very fast. That's like, that's an inventor's dream, right? To have something come out in a year. But I would say typically, like right now, they're choosing their 25 line, right? They're like making final touches. Some companies, you know, especially the larger ones, have to do it sooner usually. And then smaller, medium-sized companies sometimes can wait a little bit longer to finalize it, or maybe they make room for something, you know, in the summer or the fall. But coming up in July will be the big Mojo pitch event. It's in person and online, so I'll be doing that. And then there's, you know, trade shows coming up in the summer and the fall, and then the big People of Play event that used to be called Shy Tag in November. So those are my 2 kind of big points of, okay, I'm going to have so many things ready for Mojo, so many things ready for People at Play. And then I'm trying to go to another show in the middle of there. So I kind of say, okay, I've got to get these ready for this time and then these ready for the next time. But at the same time, I'm also pitching currently right now things that I have ready because I'll have too much to pitch at Mojo. So I'm trying to also pitch more now.
So going to trade shows is pretty darn important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
It really is. And the reason is, and those 2 are pitching events, but like when I went to Dallas a couple years ago and then New York last September, I think it was August, September, October timeframe, is when you walk the show, and you know this too, Stephen, is you see companies and you get to meet them and shake their hand. And maybe they said when you reached out on LinkedIn or via email, they weren't taking any submissions. But then you say, oh, you weren't a year ago. Are you now? And you're in person. And then you get to just set up a meeting and pitch to them right there. And it's fantastic. So I think you really, one, you get to establish that relationship. You get to build that relationship. And then you get to really have the opportunity to show people things in person. And I really believe that things can be licensed, you know, sooner or more often or more, even more quantity wise, when someone gets to play that game in person, because then they already know, oh, wow, I really like this. I need to now take this back to my team. But if they're viewing it on a video, it's not like it's the best next thing we have. And I'm thankful for, you know, the videos. But if I could show someone something in person and play a few rounds, I would much rather do that.
Okay. Last question. Amanda Hutton, you probably know Amanda. I think you probably do. She was in the toy, went to the pet. And I asked her this question. I said, how many companies do you pitch to? Mm-hmm. And she says, it's actually gotten smaller as I've gotten. As I've been in the industry longer, my client list has actually got a little smaller.
Sure.
Because I know them and they know me. And mm-hmm. I'm pitching to not potential licensees. I'm pitching to clients, my clients. Do you find that's true, that you have a certain group that they know you pitch to? Or are you still looking for other companies? I mean, how wide are you casting your net still?
Yeah. So I would say it's kind of both. And here's why. Because some smaller companies, you know, they start up like an inventor like me, a new game designer, and maybe they've got six games. And then all of a sudden, boom, in a year, they've got 12 and 15 and they're trying to, you know, just maintain the business that they don't have time to create. And now they're looking for designers. So I'm looking for those companies right now to add to my list that I could license to, right? And at the same time, there's companies I pitch to, and I will pitch to them at an event, and I'm grateful for the pitches. But there's companies, right, that they're not my first go-to because they maybe they never, ever email me back, and I don't see them until the next pitch event, you know? And so you start wondering, well, is it worth it? Is it worth even pitching to them? And I do when I get the chance. But, okay, you know, I can see how you could start chiseling down that list of people if they never respond back to you and you haven't placed one with them yet, you know?
So do you have a list of companies that, well, let's put it another way. Are there some companies you like, oh, I don't really want to work with them for whatever reason, maybe they're hard to work with, maybe they don't get back to you. Do you ever have that list too? Like, they're not my favorites. I kind of stay away from them.
I wouldn't say necessarily that list, but it's the opposite. Like, I've got my list of people that I enjoy working with, and that even though I haven't licensed one with them, we've got a great relationship, and the goal is to like find that perfect game. And I feel like it's getting, often it's mutual too. Like, okay, we're going to get the next one April, right? Where they feel that too. They want to work, but the game just has never worked out. So I feel like I have more of like, these are the people I want to show first. Like they're the first to see things. You know, I do have a list of those people.
How would you handle a situation that if you submitted an idea, a toy to a toy company, and a year later, you see your idea out there, mm-hmm. they're not paying you a royalty. How would you handle that situation?
You know what? That it's a tricky thing, right? But I will say that there was something similar out on the market, in theme-wise and a little bit of the gameplay-wise. And, you know, and I wasn't sure what to do. And I did ask for advice from another friend that's been in the industry longer. And they said, you know what? Just ask. And it was such a great response. The company had recently acquired a small, like another company underneath them that already had that in the works that I had never pitched to. And you know, at first I thought, oh gosh, are they going to take my meetings again? And they have, right? It was just, oh, that makes complete sense. I appreciate it because I said, I pitched you this a few years ago. And can you just, I'm sure it's a misunderstanding, or maybe your team didn't realize it, you know, kind of thing. And it went over well. And I think we have to, one, assume that maybe the product development team is not always knowing what the inventor relations team is seeing and vice versa, because sometimes you'll pitch something and the inventor relations person will be like, oh my gosh, this is so great. This is fantastic. I haven't seen anything like that. But then you get the email back, oh, our internal team didn't know this, is working on something similar, and they're going to go with theirs instead of yours. And you're like, oh, dang it. Not everybody knows what everybody's doing all the time. So I really do think the majority of the time, or the most of the time, people are honest. They don't want to ruin relationships with us, you know, and they really do want to find a good fit. Like, they want to be the hero finding that next hit game. And if we can bring it to them, you know, it'll be a win for everybody.
I think you're amazing.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for watching this video. You can find April on LinkedIn, connect with her. She knows what she's doing. She does a little, what do you tell us about that? Because I sometimes I watch it, but you're very regular with that. You talk about your journey. What is that?
Yeah. So every Friday on LinkedIn, I post a video. I have a series called The Documented Life of an Inventor.
There it is.
And I give just, you know, it's usually 5 or 6 minutes or less of kind of like a recap of my week, but there's always some kind of tip or something that I share, you know, feedback that can help people. And then because been doing the games and having so much success, I partnered with Ed Garten, and we do a tabletop game design master course, which, you know, we have a great time teaching of that as well. And we partnered with Ajelle Wade, who hosts that on her site, which is fantastic.
Guys, I would highly recommend, if you want more information, follow April. If you really want to dive in and have some experts help you, look into this program. They're going to teach you how to do this. It's priceless. I know you guys do a good job with that. Not easy to do, and you need help. So that's why you're watching this YouTube channel. That's why you're going to connect with April. If you want to dive into the toy industry, work with good people that know what they're doing. That's the best advice I can give anybody. April, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, you've got this great idea and you need a little help, and we're going to help you. We're going to give away $25,000 in prizes to help you license your ideas to companies at InventRight. So how does this all work? It's pretty simple. Once we hit 100,000 subscribers on our channel, we're going to run a contest and show you how to win some of our programs. So what are we giving away? First of all, we're giving away two of our premium programs. That's where you get a personal coach that's going to guide you each week for you to license your product ideas. They're going to be behind the scenes to make sure you're doing everything right, to make sure your marketing material is spectacular, making sure you protect your ideas correctly, and making sure you're reaching out to those companies and saying the right thing. And then once there's interest, we have a coach that's going to come in and help behind the scenes you negotiate that licensing agreement so it's fair and balanced. All right, so what's the second prize? Well, the second prize is 3 Gateway programs. What's Gateway? Hey, it's real simple. Gateway is where we at InventRight handle everything for you. We're going to find the companies, find the right people, and make sure your product is pitched correctly to get that licensing deal. So all these prizes, the 2 premiums and the 3 gateways, it adds up to over $25,000 in prizes to you. So how does this all work? It's really quite simple. All you have to do, subscribe down below if you haven't already. And once we hit 100,000 subscribers before the end of the year, we're going to run a contest and we're going to give away those prizes to help you license your product ideas.